Hello, band of brilliant bantering banthas. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is episode 32. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your hearty party of arty and smarty farties.
Oh.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
I'm Chris.
I heartily approve of the Star Wars reference.
Yes,
snuck in there with the
just for you. Yes. And this episode is brought to you by our outrageous, outgoing, and outstanding men's outfitter friends at Bonobos. Summer's over, so why not fall into fashion?
Oh my God.
Why not, indeed?
With some of the best-fitting clothes around that will blow your mind. Actually, if you head on over to our Good Job Brain Facebook page, you can see my very silly modeling attempt wearing a bonobo shirt, posing with a bear and a pirate. Bonobos actually just released some quirky limited edition pants. They're Halloween pants called Radio Slacktives, are tailored white slacks that glow in the dark.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, that
it's
is
pretty cool.
Cool.
Sadly, those are sold out. But they also have these special, what they call party animal pants that have little embroidered elephant or donkeys in time for a U.S. election. So visit bonobos.com, and Good Job Brain listeners and new customers get 20% off with the code Smarty Pants.
Though, just to be clear, buying a pair of those pants does not count as an actual vote in the election.
No.
Yes.
You gotta be clear about that. And we got some bizarre headlines to share, huh?
I read a story recently and I thought to myself, my goodness, this combines so many things that we here at Good Job Brain love. And so I absolutely wanted to share all of this with you in a segment that we are titling...
Honey, I'm telling you, you're making me blue. That's why I know it's true.
Yes, honey, you're making me blue. Beekeepers in the Alsace region of France discovered something very, very strange recently. 12 different apiaries in this one region, they were collecting up their honey, and something turned out to be very wrong. The honey was coming out colored funny colors, like blue and green.
What?
And this was very bad. And they can't sell it. Like, nobody would actually eat this weird blue-colored...
I would!
Yeah. They said, no, we can't do anything with this. So they had to figure out what was going on. The bees were all producing blue and green honey. So they launched an investigation, and they find out that the bees had picked up an interesting new hobby. Instead of going out, you know, to flowers and whatever, they were heading down to the neighborhood biofuel production plant and loitering. And the way that they make biofuel is they break down food matter. And as it turns out, they get waste from food production facilities delivered to them. And this particular plant was processing waste
from
M&M Mars.
Yeah. No!
The plant was taking deliveries, bins of unsellable M&Ms, and bringing them into the plant, but they were uncovered. And so a lot of times the bees developed a habit of chowing down on the shells of M&Ms. They were just sort of
sweet and sugary.
Of course,
it's delicious.
It's everything bees love. And so they were jumping on these M&M shells and actually eating M&M shells instead of eating, you know, instead of doing their job.
Fantastic.
And then actually that turned the honey blue and green.
I saw this as well with a photo of the, and you're absolutely right.
Oh, the stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. Green and blue and
like they've got some they had a honey that was like a clear, see, you think you want blue honey, but like they had a honey that was sort of a clear green color, but then the rest of the stuff they were showing was actually this really opaque muddy blue purple colored honey.
Yeah, when I saw that, there was another article that I guess was related. This happened, in all seriousness, this happened, I guess, last year as well. In New York, there were some beekeepers noticed they were producing bright red honey that, in a similar way, they had traced it back to a maraschino cherry production facility.
Wow.
And they were picking up the coloring and it was getting its way into the honey there.
Yeah,
so
that sounds tasty.
I think the tragedy in all this, though, is the increase in diabetes.
Oh my God.
And the obesity.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
All right, and it's time for our general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. Everybody get your barnyard buzzers ready. I got a random trivia pursuit card here, and let's start with Blue Edge Geography. What St. Louis rapper leads a crew called the St. Lunatics?
St. Louis rapper.
Dana, come on.
Trick question.
Guys, is there are no St. Louis getting rappers. Hot in here?
Oh, is it Nelly?
It is Nelly.
Is he from St. Louis?
He's from St. Louis.
I don't think I knew that.
I thought he was from more southern, a more southern state.
You could give me every hint in the world, and I would not have gotten that question.
Be like,
Nelly himself could have given Chris the hint. Anyway.
Right. He could have. Okay, here. How about this hint, Chris? And Nelly walks in the front door.
All right. Pop culture, Pink Wedge. What name is Lawrence Turode better known by?
Lawrence of Arabia?
No.
What?
Pop culture.
Pop
culture?
Well, sure.
Lawrence Turode is Mr. T.
Correct. Oh. Mr. T. That is a very classy name. All right, Yellow Wedge. Who was crowned Emperor of the Romans, effectively the first Holy Roman Emperor in the year 800?
Oh, is it Constantine?
No.
Hmm.
Effectively the first Holy Roman Emperor.
Man. Is this Alexander the Great?
No. Also starts with a C, though.
Yeah, it does.
Is it one of the Caesars?
No. Charlemagne.
Yes!
Oh, yeah.
Good!
That's what I was
thinking. Retrieval! Yeah.
Wow.
Nice save.
That's what I thought. I knew C, but...
We get there eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Purple Wedge. What ism of the 1950s inspired The Crucible by Arthur Miller? Oh. Chris?
McCarthyism.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. McCarthyism. Green, white for science. What Roman god were volcanoes named for?
Oh.
Colin?
Vulcan?
Correct. Vulcan. Orange Wedge, last question. Which is not a likely ingredient in a michelada? Is it beer, tequila, lime, chili, salt, soy sauce, or tomato juice?
Tequila.
Correct.
Mm.
Yeah, good old Michelada.
It's a beer-based flavored cocktail. Beer. Yeah.
Quite tasty on a hot day.
Is it?
So is it made of all those things?
When I make them, I usually do beer, lime juice, salt. Mine's pretty basic, but another common one is with tomato juice, absolutely.
And soy sauce?
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
All right, and we're moving into our topic of the week, which is fads. Alright, and I want to start off by asking you guys, you know, growing up, there have been a lot of crazy fads. Were there any fads you were totally into?
I think the closest thing that I could say as a fad that I got into was California Raisins. In the late 80s, early 90s, right, when the California Raisin Advisory Board, or CalRAB, came up with in retrospect, absolutely genius marketing campaign.
They killed it.
For raisins. Oh, yeah.
With the claymation, the little dancing raisins.
Oh, yeah, it was claymation, dancing raisins, singing and dancing, heard it through the grapevine, you know, making the raisins into a doo-wop group, basically. And it just took off.
Yeah.
The way you're describing this sounds insane. Yeah. It sounds ridiculous.
Right.
It captured a life of its own.
Revival of 50s, 60s era music and very clever. I mean, claymation in and of itself getting more and more interesting. Was technically adept in that era. It just happened to take off. And so I got into it because I was collecting the figurines.
And there was actually a raisin board. A California
Raisin Advisory Board. Right.
They need to increase consumption of raisins.
And they still, I mean, it's still around. I think kids were dressing as California Raisins for Halloween. You can get all kinds of California Raisin plushes and toys, but I mean, for me, it was the PVC thing. There was a California Raisins Christmas special that was on, you know, and so it was
like, are they even cute? Like,
they are cute.
They are cute. Oh yeah. So yeah. I mean, I still have all the figures. Like, I literally have all but a handful of the California Raisin figures because I spent, you know, all that time that period of my childhood, those few years, building a collection of them. As we know, I collected all kinds of things. As a kid, I collected Statue of Liberty stuff, coins, rocks.
I was really cool. Yeah. I don't know if you picked up on that.
I was super cool. Awesome. Yeah.
We need more dried fruit character bands. That'd be great. We gotta bring it back.
It's sad that we've only had the one. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazin.
The Pennsylvania prunes never really caught on. Quite wasn't as much as big a hit.
So I was reading BuzzFeed, which is a great source of fad reminiscence, and I saw one about the Babysitter's Club, and I was all about the Babysitter's Club when I was younger.
I know. Me too. And I don't even remember what really happened in those books. It was just a bunch of girls.
There wasn't crime fighting, right? It was more just like high school drama.
There were mysteries occasionally had to solve. And it's like, who's been playing pranks on the babysitters while they're... I know, like random
stuff. I do remember a lot of my friends who were girls really hugely into those books. Yeah. Yeah. There was a time when I was really, really into E.T. Like, when E.T. came out.
You guys and, like, wrinkly things. Like, you like the raisins and you like E.T.
It was such a huge hit when that movie came out. And I was just a sucker for E.T. merchandise. And, like, they had E.T. trading cards.
He's not even cute.
He scared me. Yeah. He really scared me.
He is. I mean, but isn't that kind of the triumph?
It's like a nightmare tree.
They can make even this ugly little alien
cute. You can see his organs. You can see his heart.
But, yeah, I mean... any piece of crap at the supermarket, if it had E.T.'s picture on it, I would pester my mom to buy it. You know, I was the kid that the marketer is like, all right, yeah, just make it look like E.T. Kids will buy it. Like, that was me.
The first thing that jumped to my mind for this episode was, of course, maybe one of the quintessential, crazy, ridiculous, why did this ever become popular in the first place fad of the 90s, which was Pogs.
Oh, yeah.
Pogs all started with everyone's favorite obsolete job, the milkman. When they would deliver milk to your house back in the day, they, you know, how it came in like a glass bottle, and what they would do is just put a round cardboard cap on top of it just to cover up the bottle of milk, basically, because the milkman is just bringing it to your house. And so this milk, of course, back in the day, we're talking about like the 20s, 30s, it wasn't homogenized milk. So when you take that cardboard cap off, you peel it off, and all the cream, as they say, has risen to the top, and when you peel it off, it's got cream stuck to it. So mom would just give it to the kids,
right?
Like, here, lick this, you know.
Ew.
No, it's delicious. It's like the most delicious thing.
Oh no, my parents would tell stories of like fighting with the siblings over who got to lick the cream off the cap.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
I guess yep. You do that with yogurt now, right? Like, yeah. When you peel off the yogurt,
yeah,
thing, you lick,
yeah,
the,
it's
yogurt,
like licking the yogurt cap, exactly. And so mom would give those to the kids, and so of course the basic rule of good job brain when we're talking about the olden days is you saved everything, and there were, you know, so of course the kids saved these cardboard caps because you don't really have much else to play with. And so Pogs was a game. Once they collected enough of these cardboard caps, what you could do is you'd stack the caps up on the floor, and then you'd take another cap and you'd throw it down hard at the stack. And what you'd then hopefully do by hitting the stack is you'd flip the caps, the milk covers, out of the stack. There's many, many variants for how these rules might go. Right. But, you know,
dumb,
because it's just made up, hey, nothing else to do. Yes. So it's pretty fun because you hit it, and then the caps flip up. And then if the caps flip up, if they land face up on the ground, you get to keep them.
Right.
And if they land face down, they go back into the stack, basically. You can play either... everybody has their own caps and you play, and whoever collects the most at the end is the winner. Or you can play whatever caps you have in your hand at the
end
of the
game. Those are
yours now. They're yours now.
Yeah, play for keeps.
Play for keeps. Yep. Exactly. So that's what kids would do with Pogs. And so basically this got very popular in Hawaii. But what's hilarious is, as I'm doing the research for this and finding out about the game, as it turns out, there is a pretty strong theory that this came from the place where everything seems to come from, Japan. There is actually a game that dates back to the 17th century called Menko. And they would print pictures of characters or like samurai or whatever on cardboard, on tough cardboard.
And it's not surprising that something culturally Japanese would make its way to Hawaii.
Exactly, where there were a lot of Japanese immigrants, especially in those times. So, now kids would play this game back in the day, and then of course it fell out of favor because you're just sort of playing with cardboard. In 1991, it's very interesting, they were able to trace this back to a single person. In 1991, there was a teacher, her name was Blossom Galbiso, she was an elementary school teacher in Hawaii, and then she used this game, I think a modified version of this game that she used to play when she was a child, and she modified it to teach math to her students somehow, I don't know, like, you know, putting numbers on the Pogs, or, you know, putting numbers on the discs themselves. This is considered to be the point at which the fad started. The kids really liked the game. They started playing the game, and then other kids in other schools in Hawaii started playing the game, and the teachers wanted to spread it around because it was a cool way to learn math. The game itself starts becoming more popular, and what then happens is...
they strip the math off.
Yeah, first. The math goes away. It goes right back
first
to what it's supposed
first.
To be.
Yeah.
First things first. So as it starts to get popular, so first of all, printing up little cardboard discs that are about the size of a half dollar is pretty actually easy. So a lot of businesses and schools in Hawaii start making them.
Their own.
And just passing them out as promotional items or whatever. And they start putting their logos on them. And one of the companies that did this was a company that produced a fruit drink that was made of passion fruit, orange, and guava.
Yep.
And the drink itself is called Pog.
Oh.
So here's the thing. You can still buy this drink. Very popular drink. Apparently it's delicious. Yeah, you can get it in Hawaii and some stores, like especially on the West Coast. So it goes nuts in Hawaii. It quickly spreads. I mean, it spreads so fast to the continental United States. And I mean, people just jump on it. They market it. And at some point along the line, the concept of the slammer gets introduced,
right,
which is a big, thick metal Pog that you throw onto the stack.
It's the hero class. It's the elite.
So basically, then the game, by the time it reached suburban Connecticut, which is where my brother got really into it, the rule was you had a slammer and you threw the slammer at the stack of Pogs. Right. So of course schools banned this because kids are throwing metal
objects.
And all the people, well, it's the gambling aspect. They banned it because like they don't want kids taking other kids' stuff and kids crying and them having to sort out who owns what. And
one of my earliest jobs was as a summer camp counselor, a day camp counselor, and we did have to ban that at our camp. I mean, I'm a few years older, so probably I would have been, you know, a little bit older to actually play with the Pogs. But we did. It was whatever that first summer that this burst through, the kids would bring them, and it was. They played, as you said, for keeps with the slammers, meaning that some kid would always get his or her feelings hurt of losing Pogs, and more importantly, the parents were like, I'm buying you these Pogs and you're losing them at day camp. It's so we had to issue an edict, no more Pogs at camp. Kids were not allowed to play Pogs.
Tough love.
Kid is not good at Pogs.
It's too bad.
You just need to practice, Jamie.
Well, that was the thing. It's just you just don't want to have to be dealing with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As quickly as it shot into being like a white hot star, it immediately fizzled out. And I'm sure a bunch of people lost their shirts on this because buying Pogs and selling them.
Pog speculation.
They were probably
whole market.
Yeah, I mean, there were probably a lot of people left with a lot of inventory of Pogs that they had bought that overnight became from like white hot collectible that they could sell for like $20 for a piece of cardboard, you know, if it was quote unquote rare, to worthless garbage.
Yeah.
Let's take a trip back to the olden days. And I want to ask you guys a question. Mm-hmm. Who are Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth?
The Little Women.
Yes!
Oh.
Mm-hmm. The characters from Little Women, very classic American book by Louisa May Alcott. And the book chronicled basically the lives of the four March sisters, Meg, Jo, Amy, and Beth, during the Civil War era. And it really kind of described the American home life. Mm. You know, what the women did when the men are off to war. And there is a really memorable part of the book where Amy, who was 12 years old at the time, got severely punished and completely humiliated at school. And what was the cause of this? It was the fad of limes. Pickled limes. Amy was caught storing limes in her school desk.
Huh.
At that time, I guess teachers treated limes like a contraband, and this was a real thing.
Yeah, okay.
Growing up reading the book, I got really confused because, you know, why would limes be a fad? Also, wouldn't they be kind of expensive?
Although pickled limes sound intriguing.
It seems so random.
Okay.
And for the longest time, I actually, you know, like you guys, I thought it was maybe a name for something else.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was like a candy that was green or something.
For drugs.
It's a street name for drugs. And I did some research, and yes, it's really referencing the actual fruit, limes, and pickled limes. During that era, especially in the New England part of the country, candy stores used to sell pickled limes in like glass jars of very beautiful or in barrels. Mm-hmm. And they're really popular because they were really cheap. Mm-hmm. At that time, the import tariff was really low because they weren't classified as fresh fruit, but they weren't pickles either.
And also, I mean, transporting fresh fruit to New England, like transporting limes to New England must have been impossible unless you pickled them and put them in barrels so they hold up over a long non-refrigerated
somewhere
journey.
Tropical, I would imagine.
Exactly. That's why it's so cheap. And so kids actually could buy a bunch with their pocket money. Mm-hmm. So what did kids do with them? They ate them. So here I'm going to read a short passage from the book.
All right.
From Little Women. And here's Amy describing the lime craze, the lime mania. Why, you see, the girls are always buying them. And unless you want to be thought mean, you must do it too. It's nothing but limes now, for everyone is sucking them in their desk in school time and trading them off for pencils, bead rings, paper dolls, or something else at recess. If one girl like another, she gives her a lime. If she's mad with her, she eats one before her face. Curls are snap. So mean.
This is Mean Girls Civil War edition.
She ate the lime right in her face.
She ate that lime right in front of me.
Oh, damn.
She got limed. They might say.
So here's a question. What did they taste like?
Yeah.
Are they salty lime? Like the tickle?
I'm guessing it must counteract the sweetness somehow. Because, I mean, I have to say, as you're describing this, I realize now I have heard of pickled lemons. And I'm wondering, it must be somehow similar. So, I don't know. I've never had them. But that would be my guess. Maybe they're less tart?
If kids are going gaga over them, I would assume they're like absolutely freaking delicious and sweet and tangy and whatnot.
Well,
but
maybe in comparison to everything else they have in like
flavor.
The dead of winter in New England. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh god, at least it tastes like something. Yeah.
This pickled sponge is terrible.
Dana is absolutely right. Apparently, when they say pickled, they mean preserved in salt. So a lot of the food historians found old recipes and most of them called for salt. And these pickled limes aren't sweet. They're extremely sour and extremely salty, which sounds terrible.
Although, was candy that was kind of like that hurt your tongue and you do it because
like Sour Patch Kids a little bit.
Or Warheads.
To bring up another fad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I can totally see that because, I mean, that was a fad for a while and it was all about like, oh, can
super
you take
sour
it?
Super sour candy.
Can you take it? Like, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking
of... Can you hold it in your mouth, you know,
again,
and
speaking
and not,
of summer camp,
right.
That was another thing we had to ban was the
really?
Atomic Warheads. Yeah, because the kids were daring each other. I can have three of them in my mouth. And kids were, it was like, no one wanted to say no. And the kids were getting like tongue blisters. And it was just the amount of things. If you want to see what you have to ban, just get a bunch of 7 to 8 year olds together.
Oh, yeah.
No, every if you want to see what the latest fad is, just ask camp counselors every year, what did you have to ban this year?
Wow.
I want to pickle some limes now.
I know.
I
want to pickle some limes and find out. All right. Lime pickling party.
Kind of on a related note, I decided to look at fad diets.
Oh, that's good.
There are hundreds of fad diets. There's so many, but I am only looking at the really weird ones.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's my filter for this. So speaking of the limes and the sour things, do you know what's in the Master Cleanse diet?
It is, hold on, lemon juice, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper.
Yes.
And
water. And
water.
Water.
And water. And
well, they all have water in them, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like all of these things work because you're not taking in any calories whatsoever, right? So, yeah, of course you lose weight.
You're not eating.
Yeah, but it's the makeup of the actual diet itself, which is junk science, but...
That's the way most of these diets work, is that you're not taking in calories at all. So the Master Cleanse diet is also called the Lemonade Diet or the Maple Syrup Diet. Mm-hmm. And it started like 50 years ago. More than 50 years ago was when they first kind of invented
it. I remember when my mom used to be on it. Yeah.
But then Beyonce said she lost 20 pounds for Dreamgirls using the Master Cleanse, and then it became a fad. And
you're getting just enough sugar from the maple syrup, to keep your neurons
firing. Yeah.
Yeah. So another fad diet that kind of caught on because a celebrity like was rumored to have done it is the baby food diet, where you eat about 14 portions of baby food during the day. And then you have maybe a healthy dinner, but basically you're getting all of your nutrients from baby food.
Yeah.
Who was that? Which celebrity was that?
That was Jennifer Aniston.
And this is even worse because the baby food has been... processed down so much, that your body is not even doing the minimal calorie, burning work of digesting your food.
So a diet where you also need to puree the food, but in your mouth, is the chewing diet.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to chew the food until it becomes purified, like it becomes so...
A slosh.
Yeah, and then spit it out.
Oh, you don't eat it?
like while you're chewing, you'll be absorbing
it. Can it be a diet if you're not actually consuming the food?
It was invented in the early 1900s. It was propagated or proposed. And Kellogg, the cereal impresario, actually was into it a bit. Another old-timey diet was the tapeworm diet.
Is that where you just got a tapeworm?
Somebody gave you a pill and it had a tapeworm in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
on purpose?
Yeah.
Not everybody knew that. That was what was going to happen.
Oh, that is so shady. That is so shady.
So shady. Yeah, so then all of a sudden you're feeding a thing that's living in your body and becomes really long.
How does a tapeworm exit?
the way that you think it does.
Oh, it's either that way, or they hold a little piece of food in front of your mouth, and the worm comes out to eat it.
Is that true? Is that really true?
We should check. No, I think it is.
I thought I had always heard that.
Is that an urban legend?
I thought I had heard that was an urban legend. They come with little ladders.
It's in the pill, too.
A little tiny telescoping ladder in the pill.
Little grappling hook.
Yeah, it's a kit, really.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's another one that's kind of a gross out diet, but it's like a psychological gross out diet. It's called the vision diet, and you wear glasses that have a blue lens in front of them.
Oh, I've heard of this one, right.
And it makes all of your food look disgusting to you. So you don't want to actually eat when you look at it. It can hurt your eyes, though, so you shouldn't wear it for too long. But
I have heard that. I have heard of people, I put, blue food coloring in the food, so it makes you eat less of it.
But yeah, apparently it does reduce your impulse to eat. But it might be because you got a migraine from wearing the blue glasses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good news, you lost 10 pounds. Yeah. Bad news, your vision is ruined forever.
Right.
Yeah.
And it could be the tapeworm pill that comes with the glasses.
What if you did all of these diets together? Like, what will happen?
The next one's the Twinkie diet.
And
that one works if you only eat Twinkies. That's all you can eat, because each Twinkie is 150 calories. So if you ate 10 of them, that's 1,500 calories.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you have to eat Twinkies forever.
So it makes you not want to eat stuff. Like, these are not diets you should do. Don't do these.
Yeah, these are not endorsed by
physicians. None of them are nutritious. This isn't the crazy fad diet list.
I just think the tapeworm would be so comfortable.
Like, keep them warm for the week.
This is pretty nice.
Like, this is great. Can I get a ring ding?
I imagine the tapeworm wearing little blue glasses. Like, none of this looks good anymore.
I'm going to leave. Yeah. I'm just going to go.
Well, should I just go out the back? See myself out.
Perfect.
So as you guys know, I took a trip to France earlier this summer. While we were there traveling around, we were doing a lot of reading just about French history. It's kind of a fun way to travel. Had a lot of fun reading about just some of the crazy fads among the French aristocracy. And
they're nuts too.
Especially, historically. So, just really the heyday of these crazy fads, the mid-1700s. And, we've talked on the show before about dandies. Dandy is just the quintessential, usually guy just with a lot of money and no need to work.
And
so
just hangs out.
Can there be lady dandies?
Not really. Like, when you say dandy, you really mean
a dude.
A young man.
Typically a younger man of, exhibits his wealth and his free time. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these fads kind of came about as ways of dandies trying to outdo each other. We're familiar with a lot of them, like the wigs. You see the wigs in a lot of period pieces, and that really is a real thing. I mean, a lot of both men and women would have the wigs and really elaborate, and the more elaborate, the higher status you were. But one of the funniest things that I came across was this fad that apparently was really brief and really popular, which all the best fads are, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a fad in the 1760s of these dandies carrying around with them pantins, which is a little marionette. You would carry around just a little marionette that you would kind of, casually pull out and just sort of play with while you're at the cafe or sitting in the park on a bench, and you would just have it with you. But this was just something that the dandies would do. And if you had your little marionette, your pantin with you, just sort of fiddle with it absentmindedly and then put it away and take it with you. And I just imagine.
So you realize this is what the iPad is going to be thought of in like a century from now.
I feel like that
people,
is dumb.
That people will be making fun of us for, exactly.
I think that's why it was a short fad, though. It was because it's embarrassing. It's like, what are you doing with the doll?
Ladies, don't you hate when you're on a date and the guy won't stop playing with his marionette?
Yeah.
It's just every 30 seconds. Seriously.
He's like, I'm working on a play with my friend.
That's
kind of
creepy.
Hipster.
Yeah, it is really creepy. It is. Yeah. It's very hipster in a way. I mean,
Hanging out
at
the cafe.
I could see a modern revival of the pantin, of the little marionettes, But again, just sort of to show that you're cool and in the know.
It's so weird.
It's so
ridiculous.
Strange. Yes.
We're going to take a little break from our topic of the week for a quick announcement. Guess what, guys? It is podcast award season. Yes, nominations are now open for the 8th annual podcast awards.
The potties.
The podcasties.
The potties. Take me to the potties.
And this is over at podcastawards.com. And please nominate us for best education category.
Yeah. We teach you things sometimes.
We're sometimes accidentally educational.
Important things.
And sometimes those things are true.
And if we really enrich your lives that much, maybe for the coveted People's Choice Award too. So please nominate us for podcastawards.com if you enjoy the show. And thanks you guys for supporting Good Job Brain. And we're going to jump back into talking about fads.
Have you guys heard of a movie named Buona Devil from 1952?
That's my favorite movie. I'm just kidding.
It is, no. It is by all accounts.
Buono?
Buona Devil. Huh. By all accounts, it's one of the worst movies ever made. Okay. And more than a little racist. But
perfect.
Would you care to guess what the significance of Buona Devil from 1952 in film history is?
Well, it was a fad.
It was. It
good
was
job.
The beginning of an incredibly hot, incredibly brief fad known as 3D.
Oh. No!
Buona Devil was the first feature-length film released in 3D.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
It was the 3D that we imagined. It had one red lens, one green lens, and it wasn't really called 3D at the time. It was called natural vision.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And natural vision was the invention of a man named Milton Gunsberg, and came up with the idea of shooting the two exposures of the film, projecting them in different colors, and using the different colors lenses to create 3D.
That's cool.
Like so many other things we've talked about on the show, he pitched his idea to a lot of major studios, and all the major studios passed on it. So he released independently this technology, and it was used to make Buona Devil. So now, back up here a second. Why did the major studios pass on 3D? So...
too expensive.
Well, it was interesting. So this was like 1950, 1951, and at the end of the 40s, the film companies and or the film studios were freaking out because film viewership was precipitously dropping. 20 million fewer viewers over 1 year.
Why? What were they doing?
I'm sure you guys can probably guess why. What major invention in the late 1940s was starting to take over households?
TV.
Oh. And obviously taking viewers away from film studios, they thought. So they were looking for ways to bring people back, and they were all in one way or another trying to come up with some
gimmicks.
New gimmick. That's yeah. Right. So Cinerama and these other really super widescreen techniques, and they all sort of pegged their fortunes to some new technology or another, and basically none of them wanted to take the gamble on 3D at that time. Buona Devil went on, for better or for worse, to become quite a hit and spawned a number of other movies that came out in 1953, natural vision movies. There were almost 70 natural vision movies in 1953 alone. Mm. You know, some of the more famous ones are like Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty quick that the major studios were like, okay, this is a thing. We got to get on the ball now. Mm-hmm. So House of Wax with Vincent Price
yes.
is it. So that one is the first major studio 3D movie to come out was House of Wax.
Wow.
It was so hot that even Alfred Hitchcock decided to get in on it. So Dial M for Murder, he filmed it in 3D. But by the time the movie was set to release, the fad had already started to die just a year later. So most of the showings of Dial M for Murder were shown in 2D, just regular 2D. But it generally seems to be that by 1954, the fad was
dying. Oh my God,
one year.
It was a year of intense 3D. And again, this is the first wave of 3D, you know, and it would have successive waves. Mm-hmm. And obviously now we have the more advanced, you know, digital means of 3D. But yeah, it was hot and brief for that 1 year.
Oops.
And
they might have made too many bad ones.
I don't really like 3D now because it's like I don't really like sitting there with the glasses on, you know, with this sort of artificial thing
happening.
It doesn't
feel like
happening.
Natural vision to you?
No, it doesn't feel like natural vision. And it felt even worse with red and blue cardboard 3D glasses,
yeah, right.
You know? It's just
right.
Like, I get these things off of me.
It really was used for a lot of cheap effects. Like you would see these movies and it was spears coming at you and people throwing things out at the screen. And it wasn't really used in a very artistic
way. They still
way.
Do that.
I was confused if you're talking about recent movies or from the
since I grew up in Asia, I cannot not talk about what I think is probably the biggest fad factory, perhaps of all time, Sanrio. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Japanese company whose cute characters have captured the hearts of millions.
Temporarily.
In bursts.
Yeah.
What they do is they generate so many original characters that would wax and wane in popularity. So I kind of want to play a really quick little game with you guys first.
Okay.
I want you guys to take turns naming Sanrio characters.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to go around, and when you can't or run out, you're out. Let's see who's going to be the winner.
Chris is going to win.
I have no idea.
Let's do Colin first.
Hello Kitty.
Karopi.
Batsmaru.
Miffy.
Aunt, you're wrong. Miffy is actually not a Sanrio character.
Oh. I was trying to pull out the obscure one early.
Yeah.
My sister's going to be so disappointed in me. Oh, she... Yeah, I'm out.
Wow.
Pochaco?
Yes. All right. Very good. Chris is the winner of so many. My dearie Lou. Yeah. There's Purin the dog. A Pandapple. Shinkansen. We talked about Shinkansen in our transportation episode. Mm-hmm. They had a little train character, too. So, of course, Hello Kitty is probably the most well-known character. Mm-hmm. She was first introduced in Japan in 1974. According to the official Sanrio character profile, Hello Kitty has a full name. Do you know what her full name is?
Hell Lawrence.
Yeah. Hello is the short for something. Yeah.
Hell Lawrence Kitty. Kitty White.
Ah.
First name Kitty, last name White.
I know the name of her boyfriend.
Which is?
Daniel.
Incorrect. What is his complete name?
Oh, jeez.
It is Dear Daniel. Hello, Kitty.
And Dear Daniel.
Kitty White. Dear Daniel Katzen.
Mm-hmm. Is he a cat, too?
He looks exactly like Hello Kitty without the bow. Do you guys know what Hello Kitty's nationality is?
Japanese.
What country is she from? Incorrect.
I'm going to just take a stab. Is she French?
No. She is British.
Ah.
What?
Yes, okay. And this is according to Sanrio's official backstory. She is British, born into the White family in a London suburb. And what's weird at the time in Japan, during the 70s, there was a big British mania fad sweeping over Japan. And so everything from the UK was kind of in fashion. And so even her name, Kitty, was kind of is a reference to Alice's cat from Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland.
I love that she's a British cat that's obsessed with Japanese things made by a Japanese company.
Who were obsessed with British fads at that time. So the creation of Hello Kitty in part stemmed from a cultural fad. It's like a fadception.
Yeah.
Sanrio started out as a silk company under another name back in the 60s. And they kind of expanded their company by investing in rubber and making rubber accessories, including rubber sandals. And so they found out that their profits increased when they sold sandals with cute design. Just a simple cute design on the rubber sandal. They're like, hey, wait a minute. Like, this was their light bulb moment. If we add cute characters and hire cartoonists to make us cute characters, then we can sell more of these rubber sandals. And what is so smart about Sanrio is they would introduce new characters and retire old ones. And these characters would become fads themselves.
Right.
Of course, not all characters achieve the same amount of success. Mm-hmm. There's some that kind of went in and out. There was My Melody that was a rabbit.
That's her rabbit friend, right? Mm-hmm. Right, right.
They weren't friends.
Have you seen My Melody lately? She's gone.
Hello Kitty disappeared her.
You make the queen angry.
Yeah, My Melody, she don't come around no more.
Oh, My Melody, you won't see her no more. Did that thing for you.
My favorite Sanrio character by far is a dog called Pom Pom Purin, or the Purin dog. And Purin, in Japanese, I guess, sounds like pudding. Mm. And he is a golden retriever, and he's very fat. I think what he is, he's half dog and half flan. Like he
perfect.
Is,
oh, he's pudding dog.
He's a pudding dog flan hybrid animal. And he would like sit in a cup, and he has a little brown beret.
I've seen the figures.
It's
weird. Yes, it's very high concept. Really the flan dog.
The flan dog.
Does he eat himself?
No. Yeah, he has a butthole too.
Really?
Yeah, he has an actual butthole.
You wonder where flan comes from.
Dana, I think I need to explain some very basic facts about biology to you.
Well, I know what all of you have now been waiting to hear. We, as you may recall, we had a music quiz stolen from us now 3 weeks ago? Weeks ago by international puzzle thief, non-infringing satirical puzzle thief Carmen San Mateo.
It has been a well-traveled quiz.
Yeah. Oh, man. That quiz has been all over the place. And you, good job, brain listeners, have helped us track down Carmen Sanmateo. Last week, as you may recall, we were able to catch one of the members of her gang, Mama Castorium, and she did not, in fact, have the quiz anymore and had handed it off to Carmen. And what she had told us was that Carmen was to be found in a certain country. And the clues that we got were, what stars have guided hungry travelers for nearly a century? And you guys helped us out and figured out what we were looking for.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, excellent job out there. We had a few people write him the correct answer, which of course was Carmen was in France, because what we're looking for were Michelin stars.
Yay!
The Michelin guidebook, made by these same people who make Michelin tires, has been around for a very long time. It is a guide basically for travelers, telling them what the best restaurants are. And of course, they use a famous three-star rating system for
coveted.
Their restaurants.
Coveted. Yeah.
Coveted. It is almost impossible to get a Michelin star, let alone three. Just a handful of restaurants. And of course, the country where this all got started was France. So again, using our Kickstarter backer money, sparing no expense whatsoever, we took a luxurious flight to France to track down Carmen Sanmateo.
That was a fun trip, guys.
It was pretty great. It was pretty great.
We're really Thanks. Making that money stretch.
We really are. And
you guys got
able
to go to France?
Yeah, here's the fruit of our investigation, finally. So let's listen in to that recording.
Oh, this croissant is so good. Ah! Sudalor! It's you! You posturing pack of pretentious podcasters! How did you find me? I never should have trusted that additive-addicted castorium-chugging chanteuse. Here is your dumb quiz. I solved the whole thing already anyway. But know this! There is no jail that can hold Carmen Sanmateo for long! Except if the jail had frozen yogurt. I love frozen yogurt. Blue M&Ms.
That was one weird lady. That's all I have to say.
Well, anyway, congratulations, guys! We actually got the quiz back.
Man.
So we can finally have this music quiz
that
we've
traveling.
Been waiting on. All that traveling, all those puzzles. Carmen Sanmateo is in satirical jail for now. I would like to finally present to you the music quiz.
Yay!
Hooray! And like all good music quizzes, there is, of course, a theme attached. So I'm going to play you a piece of music, and you are going to tell me the artist. Go.
Buzzer's ready.
Buzzer's at the ready. Sounds kind of like Karen.
The artist is Rockapella.
Yes, the artist is Rockapella.
And that song was something about Indiana.
Yes, it was. So let's move on.
Now one and one is two. Two and two is four. I'm heavy loaded, baby. I'm booked. I gotta go. Fine, baby.
Confused.
Is that Colin?
Is it Robert Johnson?
It is.
Whoa.
It is Robert Johnson.
And I believe he's singing Sweet Home Chicago.
He is. Good job. Okay. Here is clip number three.
I wonder what the theme could be.
Look, I didn't say it was a hard theme. Okay. Dana.
The Killers.
Wrong.
What?
Anybody else want to go first?
Oh, Brandon Flowers.
Yeah. Yes, it is
the
Brandon Flowers. Lead singer of The Killers. But that was the big single off of his solo album.
Okay.
Yes.
Las Vegas.
Trick question.
Tricky. Yeah.
Karen.
James Taylor.
James Taylor.
When in doubt, it's Chris's music quiz.
It's probably James Taylor.
James Taylor's in
it. Okay, yeah, the song is Honey Don't Leave L.A. from his album JT. All right. Yes.
Okay. JT.
Yep.
Oh, I could use a drop to drink right now.
I'll guess.
Yeah?
Beach Boys?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you're actually making the same
Brian
mistake.
Wilson.
Yes!
There we go!
Yeah. Nice.
Yes. In Blue Hawaii off of Brian Wilson's version of the album
Smile. Oh, man. Yes.
Everybody all at once.
Billy Joel?
It is, yes. Yes.
The intro. Oh, I was going to guess Lady Gaga's version. I thought it was going to be true. New York State of Mind.
That is just the intro to New York State of Mind. And of course, as Karen correctly surmised, the theme of this round is singers Chris really likes.
Well, I for one am really glad we finally got to bring closure to this music quiz that was begun over a month ago.
Thanks to all of our listeners who wrote in. Man, we got a lot of answers. You guys helped us figure it out. We actually randomly selected Super Sluice, who wrote us in, and we're going to have a little prize pack to remember our adventure.
Good job, guys.
Good job, everybody. All right, great. That's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot about crazy fads and licking cream off of paper and
dogs shaped like Floan.
You can find us on Zune Marketplace, on iTunes, and also on Stitcher and our website, which is goodjobbrain.com. And don't forget to visit our sponsors, bonobos.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Whoa, Karen. We just caught Carmen San Mateo. That means there's only one more thing we have to do, and you know what it is. Do it, Macapella!
Yeah.
Don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us. Please, please don't sue us.
She's a satirical swindler, legally distinct from others. She's a fair use finagler who is plainly parody. She's discreetly designed so we don't get calls from lawyers. Tell me,
who in the heck is
Carmen San Mateo?